Hey, are you ready to move your life? I mean, really move it? It's time to turn up the dial on your energy, your health, your sport performance, your happiness, and your relationships. If you want to live with more freedom, more adventure, more passion, more fun, and more success, if you're ready to get your brain in the game and achieve the most out of every area of your life, then it's time to move to live and live to move with your host, Jill Summers.
Hello, you made it, you're here, you're in the right place if you are ready to dial up your life. This is Jill with Jill M. Summers Performance Coaching, and this podcast is designed to guide, coach, support, and challenge you to live your life out loud, way out loud. Today, I am here with Peggy Kirking. Peggy and I are honoring a very, very dear friend of ours, Margaret Steinem, who passed away about a month ago at the ripe age of
94.
This woman was such a gem in both of our lives, and I know so many other people's lives. And we felt that this was a really wonderful way to honor her and the way in which she touched us and others. So just a little background about how I met Margaret. In 2006-ish, 5-ish, I started coaching groups of women to do triathlons. And it varied from very beginners to intermediate to advanced. And Margaret was interested in being a participant. And I wasn't sure, because at the time she was in her low 80s. And I didn't really know what her athletic background was until I found out that she had started doing triathlons at the age of 60, and she had done one every single year up to that point when I met her. And I said, hell yeah, you are in, and this is going to be so exciting. So she participated in the 8-week training program and did the race with us that year. The next year, she wanted to participate again, but she was having some problems with her eyesight. And she was confident in the three sports, swim, bike, run. Although I might tell you a funny story about coaching her in the water. But the challenge was driving the car, getting to the workouts, and then eventually it was getting to the race itself, because as most triathlons, the race starts very early in the morning. So she came to me a week before the race and she said, Jill, I am ready for the race, but I just can't drive there in the dark. And I said, oh gosh, don't you worry about that. We will get you there for the race. And I went to work trying to figure out how I was going to get her there. And I was stressing because I had a lot on my plate. And I thought, gosh, how am I going to? And I wasn't very good at delegating, by the way. Still not all that great at it. That's a learned skill. But I decided that we would ask the athletes, because at the time we had over 100 athletes. Surely one of the athletes would be able to help. But it was really hard for me to put that out, because I didn't want any of the athletes to feel like they needed to do that when they also were focusing on their own race. So decided to do it anyway. And wonderful Peggy, who's sitting here with me right now, and Kristen said, yeah, absolutely. We live nearby her. We will take her under our wing and make sure that we get her to the race. And sure enough, they got her to the race, and she had an amazing day. She completed it no problem. We were a little concerned about her maybe getting off course, because she also had spinal stenosis, so she had a hard time when she was biking lifting her head and being able to see forward. So oftentimes she could only see a couple feet out in front of her, but she had the ability to stay upright and to get through the course. In any case, from that day forward, Peggy and Kristen built this amazing relationship with her, and they stayed tight, and you kind of became another daughter mm-hmm. for her, and really, you lit up her life
well
in a lot of ways. And what an incredible lesson that was for me was never be afraid to ask others to step up, because you know, when we give, we get. And that was a beautiful opportunity for you to get, and also, of course, for Margaret to receive from you. Mm-hmm. And in return, she also was able to give so much to you in addition. Mm-hmm. So that's my rendition of the story. Do you remember that any differently, or do you have any other details that you would add to that?
No, I mean, just that when we went for the training, it was a Friday night, I think before a Saturday event, and you had everybody come together, kind of a pep rally type, some snacks and things, and you introduced us to Margaret, and then Kristen got talking with her, and Kristen came to me and said, "Let's drive her, she's amazing." And I'm like, "Perfect." And then, you know, from that point forward, it became just a fabulous friendship.
Yeah.
And the next day she wouldn't let us pick her up at her home. She would only meet us. She loaded up her bicycle on the car carrier and met us at 4:30 in the morning at Bed Bath & Beyond in Mequon.
Okay.
And she got herself from home in Cedarburg there, and then
at about age 83.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Spent the whole day doing the event. We're down there, you know, before the crack of dawn. And then we had something to eat after the event. Drove her back to Bed Bath & Beyond, and she loaded her bike back up and drove on home.
Yeah.
I mean, so that was the start of a very warm and fulfilling relationship.
I'll tell this other story about the triathlon. I had asked her to do the speech that night.
Oh.
Do you remember? And I said, you know, just maybe 5 minutes, 10 minutes. And she got up there. She was in her glory. And she went on for probably 15, 20 minutes. And she was such a hoot. She was so funny. As Peggy has a couple letters here that she's going to share with all of you to hear a bit of Margaret's humor, because she had a love for language. Mm-hmm. She had a love for large words.
Yeah.
We were like, "Margaret, what does that mean?" We're going to have to look up that word, because we have no idea what that word means. Nor could I even say it now that you've used it in a full sentence. And she had such a zest for life in a lot of different ways. She played the violin.
Yeah.
She, prior to us knowing her, she was a physician.
Yeah. Yeah, first female chief of staff at Woodstock, in Woodstock, Illinois, at the hospital there. And I believe she has like a library named after her. And she's on, in her high school, she's on the Athletic Hall of Fame.
Back when they really didn't have sport for women.
No.
She was already involved.
And but also, her love of music and her love of all sports. And then she had that lake home in Spread Eagle where she would golf, which she excelled at, and be captain of her motorboat, be, you know, in charge of the canoeing and the direction we would go. And then, you know, she would love to go with me to talks that our son was orchestrating at UW-Milwaukee. She was all over it. She would just go and interested in all things political. And she was also a volunteer, too. She volunteered for political causes. She worked at Peace Action as a volunteer, sending out mailers for the endeavor of worldwide peace, and had countless family members and friends and entertained in a special fashion, which I take forward to this day.
Uh-huh.
With one remarkable thing about Margaret was she had lost her sense of smell at some point, but when you went to her house and she would have fixed a meal and she had a candle going in several rooms, even though she could not smell. Mm-hmm. And she would have her classical music playing, and she was quite, I thought, an incredible entertainer too.
Was the day she had us over there for lunch, the table was set perfectly, and she had her best china out, and and a nice bottle of wine, and
yeah.
we had just finished like a 15-mile bike ride.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And once again, you know, as just a reminder, the timeline at that point, she's probably late 80s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Still riding her bike.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. We would keep her bike at my house because I really insisted she not go by herself.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't have other people that were interested in taking her, so we kept her bike at my house, and she loved to do the hills.
Mm-hmm.
We would go on the Ozaki Interurban Trail and go to where there were some hills, and she loved it. She loved the challenge of it, and so biking was another one of her passions.
One of my favorite stories is for those of you who might not understand the world of triathlon or just even know, you know, much about the sport, you compete in age groups, and the age groups are 5-year intervals. And once you get to, I want to say, 70, it just is 70 and up. As a reminder, she was doing this triathlon that we were together when she was 83. And so she wrote a letter to the governing body of triathlon, USAT, and said, I think this age group needs to change. It needs to be 70 to 75 and 75 to 80 and 85, or 80 to 85. And because it's not fair that I'm competing with other 70-year-olds.
Yeah.
And, you know, at that point, I think maybe there were two other people in that age group.
Gosh.
But she had, again, just such a vigor to her. And I know she had shared with me, I had done some personal training with her, and she shared with me that she did a lot of study on osteoporosis.
Oh, okay.
That was one of her strong areas of inquiry.
Uh-huh.
And they had found that how important it was to have impact, to keep your bones strong. And every day she would do her bone strengthening exercises.
Yeah.
That included impact.
And I still have pictures of her at 90 or 91 in the weight room at Newcastle, which I brought today. But she was actually doing weightlifting with her legs and arms and everything at 91
yeah.
years old at Newcastle.
To paint the picture, we have a bunch of, for you all to imagine, we have a bunch of pictures of Margaret out. We have newspaper articles and just really celebrating her life here. So we're looking at her, for those of you who might know the Milwaukee area, we have a picture of Margaret at age 91 at Concordia, which is a huge bluff. It's actually a college, but they have a huge bluff there with stairs going down and a path, and she used to run that even in her late 80s.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we have pictures of her playing tennis and up at her favorite place up north, canoeing and motor boating
What you say about her with the age thing, also with the Wisconsin Senior Olympics, she, I believe there was a division 80 and over, and she was the only one close to that, but they couldn't find anybody for her to play, so they gave her the award that she could even be out there and up and able to play. Mm. They gave her the award. She wasn't having it. She was like, I didn't do anything for this award. She said, I'll play somebody 60 if I have to, but she wanted to actually play somebody so that she could see she earned that
right.
award. It wasn't enough for her just to receive it, that she was there ready. She wanted to actually play someone, so she was going to write them too and say, please make sure next year I play somebody for this award. So it just shows her resolve.
Right, and a very, very fair woman who
yeah.
liked to challenge herself and not just get something for showing up.
Yeah, uh-huh. right, yeah.
Yeah, gosh. So as the years progressed and the triathlon stuff became something of the past, you two kept a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
What was it about having her in your life that was so impactful?
Well, I think that she was just such a selfless kind of person that it was just a joy to be around her. I mean, she was so incredibly accomplished. And then, you know, she just had a interest and a zest for so many different things that she was just like total delight to be around. And then she was also always super supportive.
Mm-hmm.
She was just also very easy to take places and to be around. You didn't have to fuss over her at all. I mean, every little thing you did for her, she was so incredibly grateful for, that it was just like really easy to want to take her under your wing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, she was still driving for much of the years I you know, had this friendship with her. And my husband too, we just adored her. I mean, to give her a hug, you know, she just melted in mm-hmm. your arms, and she would hug back, and she wrote, I have a whole folder just of countless letters and things. And she was somebody, everything you did for her, she so gave back. And the headings of her letters and things kind of crystallize how she felt about us, mm-hmm. which is, it's just like a lesson in relationships. But the start of this letter in 2014, very dear, extra special Peggy, comma. And each letter had a different heading. And one here, very dear Mike and Peggy, you know. So she was just so accomplished, and never dwelling on it,
yeah.
and so warm. And it
and
just,
you have a picture here of her going to one of your triathlons with you when she was
yes.
done competing, but she went to support you at it.
Yes, yeah, yeah. She and just, you know, you wanted to perform for her, having known everything she's done in her day. And but the one out at Camp Wickham Mason too, she had to get up at the crack of dawn,
uh-huh.
and you know, always saying, "Let me get myself to you. You don't have to." But we eventually just loved having her around so much that we had a little suite for her in our house,
mm.
and we would take her to the restaurant Beans and Barley, and then she would just simply eat what we're eating. She didn't have to look at the menu in order. She said, "I'll have what she's having," and really thoroughly enjoy it. And then she'd listen to the talk. We'd sit in the front seat, and she could actively discuss what was being presented that night. We'd go home and sit at the kitchen counter, Mike, she and I, and we'd discuss the speaker and how we felt about it. And then she'd go off to bed. She had this cinnamon tea, that sweet and sour cinnamon tea she loved, and she was so easy to have around,
mm-hmm.
and so stimulating. And then she'd go off to bed, and then in the morning she'd get up and we'd have a breakfast plan, but she'd sneak out because she didn't want to disturb mm. us. And then she'd drive on home, and I'd call her, "Margaret, you know," and she didn't
you
want to
snuck out again.
Yeah. She said, "I know you've got things to do." So I went on home, and we confirmed she's back at home, and
mm-hmm.
and then, you know,
she's probably practicing her violin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She was a very astute musician.
Yes, yeah. She loved classical music,
and she could play Mozart.
Yeah, yeah. She had her violin. I don't know how old it is, but it's a very valuable violin, and she would play it any chance. She took lessons up until, you know, maybe 80 years old or so, or maybe a little bit into her 80s, actually, from a woman who lived in Glendale. So it was into her mid-80s. And then she loved playing with young people. Kristen's
mm-hmm.
daughter was nice enough to play on more than one occasion with her.
Mm-hmm.
And she just delighted in getting with people younger than herself, and just was stimulated by so many different things, music and cooking. Mm. And
talk about living out loud. And that's one of the reasons that I wanted to do this memory of for her,
mm-hmm.
this honor, is she really did live this life that I would aspire to
mm-hmm.
live. You know, she stayed physically active, mentally active. She used to make fun of herself because she thought she was losing it, but I would always be like, "Margaret,
yeah.
gosh, you're remembering more than I'm remembering, so I think you're doing pretty good."
Yeah, yeah. She, same with us. Both Mike, who's got an incredible memory, and me, she would remember things that we were look at each other and wonder, how did she remember those things?
And the words that she could not only remember, but be able to throw into sentences where the rest of us, our heads were sort of spinning like,
Yeah.
You have an example there.
Well, just even she called her holiday letter the annual Christmas lucubration.
And what does that mean?
I had to look that up. It means laborious or intensive study. And when you read the letters, I got two out of three here that were 4 pages long. And so much
of
it.
All typewritten.
Yeah. Right. So it's a lot of words there. And so much of it was really humorous. But she used to hear a word, pathognomonic, which means beyond a doubt. So, and then this word, atavistic, which means suggesting the characteristics of a remote ancestor or primitive type.
Oh, goodness.
But it wasn't just me and it wasn't just Mike, but everybody that read these letters said, whoa, she had some kind of vocabulary,
right.
And she thought nothing of it. Mm. So, but she also had some humorous parts in these letters, and I reviewed them recently, and I end up kind of laughing out loud about some of the things she would write. I was going to share the one about the purse.
Great.
If I can, let's see. Well, one thing, let's see, where is the one about the purse? Let's see. She also, she wrote something also about glaucoma, which maybe I'll try to.
Well, and she teased a lot about losing things, losing
yes.
her keys, not being able to find where she put her purse, and
yes.
Being able to find exactly what she set down just moments before.
So this is one example of something she wrote. An integral part of procedural dementia is losing and misplacing stuff, which I do every day. I have turned my second bedroom into a lost and found department. But I'm having trouble staffing it. One victory involves my purse. I have special compartments for everything, whether it is my library card or my billfold. I am so proud that I am tempted to stop total strangers on the street and demonstrate the utter magnificence of the system that I have evolved. This doesn't prevent me from losing the whole purse, however. She says, only yesterday I left it in the waiting room of an office. Thank heaven for honest people, or I would be dead. Speaking of dead, it is one of the two most important things you do in your life, and you don't get any credit for it. And quite honestly, why should you? It is neither unique nor original. But
but she was.
Yeah.
She sure was unique and original.
And original.
And a wonderful mentor for us in a way that she never even realized.
Yes, one thing recently, on a slightly different note, that I was able to take in when she was in her room at Newcastle was I didn't know that she and I were out canvassing together for the Obama campaign. And I did not know that when we were in the office getting set up for this, that the Reuters newspaper was there taking pictures of us. So I have a picture of her at, in 2000, I think it was 2014, of she and I, no, not 14, it would have been 2008. She and I, in Reuters newspaper, I found out. She never knew it, so I was able to take it. I can't copyright it. I can't take a picture of it because of copyrights. But she and I were filmed on camera.
Right.
As doing that, and I thought that was remarkable at her age that she was willing to go out canvassing door to door.
Yeah.
To talk to people about certain candidates. So
What would you say is your... doesn't have to be just one, but your greatest takeaway or lesson absorption that you received from her?
I mean, I think that's the thing that strikes me the most about her is just her incredible sense of modesty and humility. Mm-hmm. It's like she was so incredibly accomplished, but, you know, still to go forth helping so many people that had less and that were able to accomplish less and, you know, to make a difference. Mm-hmm. And so she really impacted so many others by the work she did, but then also so many of us by just being such a great person and always, you know, being so humble about who she was. I mean, to me, you know, if I accomplish nothing else in my life, it's to be, you know, humble and realize, mm-hmm. you know, that what you have and maybe how much you did, but how many more people there are to help and to impact. Mm-hmm. Because she was one of these people that truly everybody that met her, everybody felt she was just a phenomenal person. Mm-hmm. And she remained incredibly meek the whole time. And so it was fun to be with her because everywhere we would go, people would be amazed at how she could walk around and navigate things. And she impacted so many and remained such a modest, meek, humble person. Mm-hmm. So no matter what you can do, you know, you can still, I've learned, you know, you can still impact and make a big difference to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So that's what I want to take forward is still keep working. You know, she was at Peace Action, you know, sending out mailers and things and going door to door canvassing and kind of keep working for your causes. And no matter what all you have accomplished, there's still more work to do.
Yeah. One of the things that, you know, it was sort of a lesson for me from her was this ability, you know, we all get these ideas of what you're supposed to do at a certain age or what you're not supposed to be able to do at a certain age. Mm-hmm. And she broke that. She like broke the ceiling on that for me.
Yeah.
For her to demonstrate to us that she was still doing triathlons in her 80s. Mm-hmm. It like gave me permission to be like, oh, I could still do that at 80. Mm-hmm. Or I can still expect other people to do that at 80.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, a one foot in the grave.
Mm-hmm.
And in it's not just the triathlon, not just the physical. It was also, as we mentioned, the continuing to challenge herself mentally and the humility to be able to make fun of herself.
Yeah.
You know, and quite honestly, in ways that probably were not deserving.
Right. Right.
And the other piece that was a takeaway for me is the relationship that you guys built. Mm-hmm. It was just such a beautiful, and you were so wonderful with helping her to continue to see her significance. Because mm-hmm. I think that's something that happens in older age, is we start to lose a sense of, am I significant? Mm-hmm. Do I even have a place in this world any longer? And you helped remind her that she did, because she started to fall into that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who am I? I'm not worthy of being visited and so forth. And and watching you two interact was really kind of sacred.
Well, thank you. One interesting thing was, you know, she was so much younger than her stated age in how she acted and how she thought. I had to continually remind myself she was 35 years older than me. 35 years. So what you said is exactly correct. It's like, what a role model for how to move forward and how to age gracefully.
Yeah.
You know, so that is also something really significant for me. And but truly, you know, I took it on as helping someone, and truly the gift became all mine. Mm. And all my kids know how much she meant to me. And she in turn meant that to my kids and to Mike. I mean, they had a mutual admiration society between the two of them. She just loved Mike too. They could, you know, really delve into the political nitty gritty. The relationship was so rich for me. I'm really grateful that she was able to receive what we wanted to give her, and so she so deserved.
So as we're starting to wrap up our interview, our memory of Margaret today, although the memory will continue to move on, if she were here right now, what would you like to say to her?
Oh, well, you know, just a reiteration like I was able to do on the final day that she lived, and the final time I saw her, that, you know, just love her so much, and she's such an icon for me, for my family, and for all of us. And, you know, to thank her for what, you know, she gave to me in my life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to let her know she'll always be a very special person to me and my family and all. So many people that knew her and asked about her and thought she was amazing, that she knows she really, really was amazing.
Yeah, that she really was loved.
And loved.
Mm-hmm. Love you, Margaret.
Love you, Margaret.
You're so awesome.
You're our special person.
You are a special person, a very special spirit, soul. One of the things I like to do as I'm wrapping up interviews is to elicit a challenge of some kind, related to our conversation. So to all of our listeners today, I'd like to challenge you to start thinking about what kind of legacy would you like to leave? And are you living that? Can you start living it more? Can you turn up the volume a little bit more today? And if you were to turn up the volume a little bit more today to be able to follow through on the legacy you would like to leave, what would that look like? And then a second part of that is, if there's somebody in your life that is mentoring you in a way that is unspoken, but you're experiencing it, could you share that with that person and let them know what they mean to you, mm-hmm. so that they remember their significance as mm-hmm. well?
Yeah.
So Margaret, as we mentioned, was a violinist, and she used to play Mozart. We are going out today listening to a beautiful rendition of Lean on Me by Bonnie Tyler, who's with the City of Prague Philharmonic Orchestra. The reason we chose this song is because, as you heard throughout this interview, that there was a beautiful weaving going back and forth between Margaret and Peggy and myself. And, you know, when Margaret needed us, she leaned on us. And when we needed her, we leaned on her. And it's a wonderful reminder that one of the greatest ways of allowing somebody into your life is to give them permission to be of service and to help. It's not a sign of weakness to need to lean on somebody. In fact, it is a great sign of strength when you allow somebody to be there for you and you provide them the opportunity to feel joyful and helpful and a part of your life. So we go out today with this beautiful song, Lean on Me. This is Jill with Jill M. Summers. Thank you for being here today. I look forward to seeing you on the next podcast.
Sometimes in our lives, we all have pain, we all have sorrow, but if we are wise, we know that there's always tomorrow. Lean on me when you're not.
Thanks for being with us today. We invite you to join us on our mission to move people forward and upward. Go to JillMSommers.com. That's JillMSommers.com for more information and to listen to other inspiring podcasts. And remember to do one thing today that moves your life forward, which impacts others around you to do the same.